It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share a common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
All right. Welcome to the program. Scott, you're looking clean shaven over there. Did you try out that straight razor?
Nope. I'm not going to do it.
You shaved twice?
I did sort of a hybrid process this morning. I used my electric and then I wasn't pleased with the results, so I went to a disposable.
Okay. Well, you look kind of,
this is as good
tight and shiny over there. All right. Well, tell us some good stuff.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Well, Wednesday's market looked like it was going to be pretty ugly for a while, but at the very last, let's call it hour or so, we had a pretty decent rally. So it ended up being mostly non-event. We're about flat for the week. The Dow down 70 points on Wednesday's market. NASDAQ down 15, S&P down 7. Not too big a deal across the board. Gold down 22 to 1662, seeing a lot of weakness in gold.
Very interesting because, you know, there was, and I want to get to this in a minute, but there was, I'll just hit that one point real quick and I'll let you continue. There was a survey done. They looked at what people thought were good investments, and the survey said 36% of people said gold, number one.
Yeah, number two, real estate, number three, stock market.
You read the same report.
I did. But, you know, I think most of those people already own gold, which is the reason that gold got so overinflated.
So they're saying how wonderful it is because they own it and they want people to buy it.
I think that's probably a lot of it. Yeah, I didn't see the backup of the statistics.
Pump and dump,
but,
okay.
Yeah, that was my suspicion. Oil down $1.80 to $105 on some fears of economic global slowdown. Mm. Tens at $220. So we're still seeing tens come down a little bit and some good buying pressure in
That sounds like a Terry Bradshaw commercial. 10, 10, 220.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
Treasury did a pretty good size auction of 5-year notes today. $35 billion in 5-year notes came in at 1.04. Now, if you read CNBC, it'll say 10.4. Don't pay attention to that. It says 1.04.
Fact check.
Yeah, 10.4.
I thought, what happened?
I went, just stepped out for a second. So overall, not too bad a day. We're limping into still what is going to probably be the best quarter since 1998. So good news there. A little bit more encouraging verbiage from Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke to continue his sort of veiled support of the idea of another round of quantitative easing.
He might not even have to do it if he just talks about it. He's taken a book out of who used to do that, Greenspan.
Yeah, there's no question that the Fed is having an impact on the market without doing anything, just by the words that they choose.
And that's cheap.
Yeah, that's cheap. And it seems to be working, so, you know, we'll take it. No complaints. A lot of concern overseas about Spain having slipped into its second recession in 3 years. Their prime minister has said that he expects to present a budget on Friday with, quote, very, very austere measures.
Isn't austere already pretty brutal?
Yeah.
Just by definition?
They're in big trouble in Spain, and they are too big to save, I think.
Well, but aren't they too big to fail as well?
It could be both.
What's their economy? It's over. They're in the $1 trillion club.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Trillion $1.4 trillion, $1.6 trillion in GDP, gross domestic product size of their economy.
Yeah, so it's a big one. And they are in the front of the line of the European worry queue. Also, however, in the UK, though, news on Wednesday that there was contraction in the UK in the fourth quarter. So we don't want to see too much of that. It starts to get things going towards a global recession, perhaps. And I think that's why we saw a lot of selling off in commodity at Wednesday's market. Oil, copper, really all the major commodities down Wednesday. Also in commodity news Wednesday, weekly mortgage applications up for the week. So that's good, and that's mostly for new mortgages. Refinancing demand fell for the sixth straight week as interest rates on mortgages climbed a little bit.
Well, and there's also only so many to refi, right?
Yeah, and eventually if you try to refi, and your bank keeps telling you no, then you stop even applying. So in important economic news, demand for durable goods rose 2.2%, was announced Wednesday morning before the market. So that's good. That's 2.2% increase over January. However, January was revised down to a 3.6% decline, and economists had forecast orders rising 3%. So even though it sounds like good news at first, the next piece of news not so good, and the next piece of news after that not so good.
So hey, it's a mixed bag. We still have some soft spots, but it's still up. It's just not as much as they thought.
That's right. It's still up.
I mean, they could come out and have said, hey, we had a negative 3% manufacturing for the month. That would have been bad.
Right. And the GDP number, we did get another look at GDP at 3% is the expectation there. That's the final look for fourth quarter 2011.
That annualized rate for the fourth quarter was 3.
Right.
That's what they now expect. When did they say that's the final number?
Tomorrow.
Okay. I mean, how long can you go before you get to say finally got to give? You know, how many times can you look at the replay?
It takes them 3 months to come up with it.
I mean, you look at the replay video only so many times. All right. Well, hey, listen, I know you got a few more things, and I've got a few things I want to get your feedback on. So stick around after the break, Mr. Scott Connor. And ladies and gentlemen, you stick around. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
We're going to break it down. Scott, where do we leave off?
Well, remember I told you yesterday about Annie's Organic Foods.
You called that one.
Wow, it was something.
Because when you said something, the macaroni went flying off the shelf. And the stock price on the IPO first day, what, up 70%?
Yeah, the original pricing range on an IPO, it's always important to keep on an IPO. There are a couple of different prices. The first is the IPO price, which is the price that you can buy shares for before it goes to the market.
But you got to be special and all that.
You
got
to be
right?
on the list. Yeah. You got to get through the red rope. The IPO shares were originally estimated to be between 14 and 16, and then they raised that to 16 to 18, and then they finally priced it at $19 a share for those who were in line. And then they went on the market, and they started trading right away at $32 a share, so really a massively successful IPO for Annie's. However,
uh-oh, here it comes.
It's a very, very, very small float, meaning that only a small percentage of the actual ownership of the company is now publicly traded. The rest of it is still owned by venture capital firms and stuff like that.
What'd you say the ticker symbol was on that one?
BNNY, because their logo is a cute little bunny.
All right. That's interesting. I'm almost just going to pull the what the numbers looked like. And yeah, look at that. Holy smokes. That was the day's trading range was between 31 and 36 and a half.
Yeah, it really had strength all day long. Now, this is a company that only does about $100 million in sales. So it's not a huge company by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, the volume was 7.6 million shares trading hands. So yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
It was probably a turnover about 3, meaning every share that went out on the public market probably changed hands 2 or 3 times today.
Just in one day.
Yeah. Big news of the Mega Million jackpot that comes out on Friday. Are you following the lottery?
I'm not, but do update me.
$500 million for the Mega Million jackpot.
Is this like a Powerball? I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, something like
okay.
that.
And, is it multi-state?
Multi-state.
Kind of like a national thing or something?
Yeah, multi-state, national thing.
$500 million.
Article in the Wall Street Journal today that says, written by an attorney that says, if you're gonna go in with your coworkers,
well, you better have a written agreement.
Yeah, get a written agreement. Make sure that there are provisions for vacation and who's in and who's not. And if whoever's buying the tickets, make a copy, give them to your coworkers. If you're buying the tickets for your group and you're also buying a ticket for yourself, make sure you delineate. Because it's not unprecedented. Here's a fellow in New Jersey who won the lotto, $38.5 million, and he said, well, this was my ticket. I know I bought a ticket that was for a group of five of us, but this one was mine.
Yeah, this was separate. This was not our money. This was separate. This isn't customer money. This is our firm money.
Right, and there was also a guy in New York who was part of a group that won a $319 million jackpot, but he didn't get to participate because he didn't have the $2 to put into the pool that day.
He was out that day.
He was there.
He just didn't have the money.
$2.
Sorry.
Ooh.
Hey, that's pretty rough. So this next lotto draw is for $500 million.
Yeah.
Holy moly. That's a lot of money.
So you take
the lump sum. Let's just say it's roughly half.
Yeah.
That's $250. And then let's say you pay the tax bracket. Well, current tax bracket is 35. Let's just say 40 for easy math. So $100 million goes. And the government's got to love that.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the government, no wonder they like the lottery, because $100 million is going to go to taxes.
Yeah, right there.
So you got $150 million.
Not bad. Go see an advisor.
Oh, you know how many times I've told people, you win the lottery, you call me,
call me.
I'll drive you up. I'll pick you up in the limo. I'll have the little black hat on, and we will do the planning
on
the way to Tallahassee.
Yeah. That's really about it for Wednesday's market. I know everybody's watching MF Global, or at least everybody in the industry is watching MF Global. It's just really so shocking that a former New Jersey governor on
and
the
senator,
board of Goldman.
Right? Wasn't he a senator?
Senator, governor, on the board of Goldman. And, I mean, everything I see looks like he is knee-deep in this mess.
Well, they're working with the folks involved. Who is
Edith,
it?
Edith O'Brien.
And she's saying basically that they wanted her to testify before, and she took the fifth, and they said, no, get out. But he had gone on and said, look, she told me that she assured him that the transfer was proper with some of those questionable transfers.
He told that to Congress
exactly.
back in December.
And so now they're asking her, but everybody knows she's talking to the prosecutors
right.
about a deal.
Yeah. They did what they call a proffer, which I'm not a legal person, but basically what a proffer is she tells the prosecutors what she's going to testify in exchange for some type of immunity or something like that.
Yeah, you're a pop culture kind of guy. It's kind of like fronting. She was fronting a little bit.
Okay.
You know, that's what it was.
you know I don't know what that means.
I know you don't. That's why it's fun to say. But you know what's interesting, Scott, is that the only reason prosecution ever does a deal like that, where they give somebody who's taking the fifth, obviously she's got something that
she's got the goods on somebody bigger.
Only because there's a bigger fish.
Yeah.
You know, it's like fishing. You catch a little fish. I've done this. I'm sure you have. A lot of people have. You catch a little fish on your hook. You say, how in the world did I catch him? The hook's bigger than he is. What happens to him next?
Bait.
He's on the hook.
Yeah.
So you caught him and you put him on the hook and you throw him back out and say, guess what, buddy? You're going to catch me a bigger one. And that's exactly what's going on
that
here.
That story is going to get more interesting as the weeks pass.
Well, and it's going to be interesting. And of course, we're not going to be the only folks talking about it, but I don't want anybody to suffer anything bad, but if he did it and he's guilty, then they're going to make an example out of him.
Heck yeah.
Lisa, do we need to go to a break? We do. We're going to be right back. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Oops, the microphone wasn't on. I was talking. Uh-oh. Going to get me in trouble. Like the politicians of late, talking when they think the microphone is off. That's funny. They caught Ronald Reagan one time. Did you read that article? They caught Ronald Reagan. He was warming up the crowd or joking around, and he said something about, Russia will end tomorrow, or the bombs start, or you know, red meat for whoever it was, and the mic was on, and you know, anyway. Hey, with the mic on, listen to this. This gas prices, people are getting pretty unhappy. I'll put it that way.
$3.90.
And here's my prediction. You make your prediction. My prediction is going to go to $5 by the time we get into the summer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've been talking about this for months. I think we'll see, certainly major parts of the country, major metropolitan parts of the country, will see $5.
California will see $5.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we may see in Florida, we may see $4 to $4.50.
Yeah, Jamie Dimon was on TV. Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan. He said he really doesn't see it as an economic headwind until $5.
I would probably agree with him, because I think at $5, you know, I filled up my I have an SUV. I admit it, folks, okay? And I filled it up, and it was $85, $90.
Yeah, that stings.
That hurts. So, well, people are not happy, and the sting is being felt by the politicians. Listen to some of these statistics. Reuters has a report out, and this is interesting because all of this, of course, squares with where we are with an election. And what's ironic is, what did we have the last time we had an election? 2008, right? And oil prices, gas prices, 2008. Good grief, they were over the $4 mark. So close to four, almost five, right?
Yeah,
$4.80, $4.70.
Yep.
Again, well, they did a, Reuters did a survey. Who did the survey? Anyway, I got a survey that was done. And anyway, the point is that the survey they do, basically a lot of people are not happy. And they are saying, you know, more people are saying, and the big thing for the president is a lot of people are saying that, you know, hey, it's, he's not handling it. Maybe he didn't do it, but he's not handling it well. And here's the interesting thing that's happening. I think this is what we're going to see. Gas prices are going to go up, not just because of oil being more expensive, but refineries are having a really hard time. Their profitability is not there. And what's happening, we're seeing the emergence of the distinction from where the oil comes from really becoming glaring. And, you know, we hear, I was going to ask you about this, and I ran across it. You've got this, what they call the Brent, where is it? The Brent crude, which is international crude, the oil from, and then you have the West Texas
Intermediary.
Yeah. So that's the domestic.
Right.
There's a pretty big spread now. It's $18 a barrel difference.
Yeah.
So if your refinery is using domestic oil, you're going to be very competitive with the folks that have to get it overseas.
Yeah, Brent always trades richer. But part of the problem with the refining is that they just can't get new refineries built. So it's really hard for them. If, you know, presumably they could build a refinery that's 50% more efficient, 70% more efficient, but they can't get them built because they can't get them through the permitting and the EPA and all that stuff.
Well, and some of the folks that own the refineries are shutting some of them down because of, and you know, it's funny, the technology, I had a recent experience. I had to get some new batteries for my bike, my road bike, not my motorcycle, but I don't have one, but my bicycle I ride. I rode this morning and I put those new, and the batteries are half the size and there's a couple years difference.
Yeah.
And they work beautifully. And so it's just everything gets smaller and more efficient. But the issue is that the average price of gasoline, of course, we've talked about, is on the rise. Monday it was $3.92. But the demand, what's ironic is the demand is falling through the floor. And you say, well, okay, so what's the rub? And it's the price of oil, but it's also the refineries having a more difficult time, as you just said, with the efficiency. The demand for gasoline, Wall Street Journal reports demand for gasoline in millions of barrel a day down to 8.5 million. And it has been much, much higher than that in the past. So there's definitely I'm looking at the chart. It's a definite downward trend.
Yeah, we should get a spike in this going into the summer. But still, at $3.90, people will make decisions to not go places.
Well, and that's what we're finding is people are getting, they're carpooling, they're consolidating trips to the store. And they're also, we talked before, Scott, about there being the cars being the oldest they've ever been on the road, so to speak. Average car being what, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old?
About 10 years.
And so you trade a 10-year-old car and real good chance your fuel efficiency is going to jump up pretty substantially.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's going to be close and interesting to watch. Here's something that we talked about, identity theft, recently on the show. We had
Riff
Fernberg and with Legal Shield, and a great interview. We're going to have him come back on again. But USA Today had an article. Get this. Talk about what's the word that people like to use? Guspa or
chutzpah.
Okay, I don't have my pop culture down, so that's why I got you here, Scott, to help me with that. Anyway, I think it's rather bold. A man tried to scheme to defraud one of the richest men in the world. He wanted to get Paul Allen's identity.
And you, I heard about
you see that.
Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, what are you thinking?
Paul Allen, the co-founder of
Microsoft.
Hey, shoot for the stars.
I guess. And you mentioned on the break, Scott wants a natural gas car.
Yeah.
Because it's what, $2
and falling
per million BTU.
Yeah.
How much is that? How big of a quantity is that? It can't be that much. I mean, it's not like it's, I think million, I think that's a lot of, but that's the amount of energy it can produce in a period of time. But here's what matters about natural gas. Natural gas has dropped by half since 2009.
Yeah.
So a lot of things are going to start happening with natural gas. In fact, this could be, and I did not know this, and this may surprise our listeners. Listen to this. Why did we outsource? Why did a lot of U.S. companies outsource jobs and operations overseas? We all thought it was about the labor, which is definitely part of it. But a lot of it had to do with the cost of oil and production and gas in the United States, that they were able to produce not only higher, cheaper labor, but get cheaper energy cost overseas. Well, with natural gas prices being so low in the United States, there are a number of companies. Listen to this. Royal Dutch Shell announced, the USA Today report announced, that this month they chose a site in Pittsburgh for a new facility to convert ethane from locally produced natural gas, into ethylene and polyethylene, which is basically used to make packages and plastics and whatnot.
Yeah, there's going to be a big trend on factories being built specifically for natural gas. And we're getting two production line cars from major manufacturers this year that run on natural gas.
I love it. And here's what's really interesting. They're talking about building 30 chemical plants. And we're talking about not a few workers. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of workers. And this could be a big turnaround, because it was the cost of all of this that really drove a lot of the jobs overseas. So I'm super excited. And I knew, you know, we learned about fracking, and I've learned another new word, the ethane you crack. So you have an ethane cracker, not a Florida cracker, ethane cracker, which is going to be occurring in Pittsburgh. So anyway, that's good news, ladies and gentlemen. And I hope someday the natural gas is everywhere and it's not being burned off, but being used. And Scott gets his natural gas powered car.
Me too.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
So totally disgusting. I'm like so sure. It's like barf me out. Ew, gag me with a spoon.
And we're back and we're gagging. Well, kind of, sort of. You know, we've had a good discussion with Scott, and I sent him on to manage the investment portfolios. And, you know, I thought it would be helpful. A couple of things I wanted to share with you. And a lot of people, a lot of stuff I've read preparing for the show today, there's a lot of reports out and polls, and a lot of people there's an optimism that's growing. A lot of people think things are going to be better. But let me tell you what, there is a lot of distrust, regrettably, because of what happened into the early 2000s and 2008 as well, not only about for advisors, but also there's a lot of distrust for the government. So what it really boils down to is the folks that handle money, both your money as investments and the folks that handle your money for taxes, you know, we don't trust them. And, you know, I was going to talk to Scott about this and it got away from me, but there's so many examples here. Here's one. Listen to this. People were asked in this survey the other day, 1992, are you better off now than you were? 37%. 2000, it was 63%. Year over year, you're better off now than you were, you know. And then 2004, 42%, 2008, 34%, and 2012, 28%. So it's every 4 years. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? So part of President Obama's challenge is that only 28% said they were better than they were. And boy, that was tough. All right. Now, let me talk to you about one other thing, very important. And where did I put it? I jumped over it. Here it is. The talk about advisors. This is actually pretty interesting. A lot of people are, again, trying to decide if they can trust advisors. And there was an article written that I thought was pretty interesting. Investopedia.com. Gentleman Tim Parker had an article that I thought was really interesting. He talked about how basically advisors will tell you, or what people advisors would like you to know, is that they're not all the same. And so if you've had a disappointing experience, or if somebody you know has had a bad experience, that doesn't mean it has to be your experience going forward. And just like doctors, not all financial people are financial advisors are the same. We're paid differently. Our education's not the same. Some of us have different legal responsibilities. We're not all filthy rich. Most of us would like to be, but we are not. And the bottom line is that, you know, we read about, you know, the MF Global, you read about some of these other crazy things, and we report them here on the show. But there are some good folks out there that can help you with your finances. Now, before you hire, you've got to check. I was going to talk to Scott about this too. I forgot. Ice Cube is a rapper, and he's got a song, and it says you need to check yourself before you wreck yourself. And it's kind of a funny way of saying it. Well, you need to check yourself before you wreck yourself with your finances. And the way you check yourself is you go to FINRA.org or SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, SEC.gov. You go to these websites and you can check out brokers and advisors. And the reason you want to do that is you want to see what's there, know who they are, and you want to know what you're getting into. And you know, it wasn't that long ago. Let me put you in our time machine and let's go back in time a little bit. Back in 2009, the SEC fined and made 15 brokerage firms pay penalties. And there was a bunch of firms that had to pay up for some bad behavior. Let me go further back, set the time machine back to 2002. At the end of that very difficult three-year period, Wall Street firms had to pay, get this, $1.4 billion in settlements with regulators. And these are some major folks that they misled. The regulators said that they misled investors by providing misleading stock advice for the benefit of corporate investment banking clients. So they did not put their clients' interest first. In fact, they put them last. These were major Wall Street firms. So, and some of these fines, one firm was fined over $100 million. That's a lot of money. You know what that's called? It's like the sheriff in Smoking the Bandit. When he caught the guys about to steal the car, he made them lean over against the car, and he came up and kicked him as hard as he could in the butt and said, "That is an attention getter." Well, that's what these fines are, is attention getters. So if somebody's getting a $100 million fine, do you think the regulators are trying to get their attention? So you need to go to the websites. You need to check out who you're dealing with. And you can check out your current broker or advisor, FINRA, FINRA.org and SEC.gov. And just make sure that you are working with, or maybe if you decide to take their recommendations, working with a reputable and an advisor also that matches up with your situation. So that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul.
to the company store.